Hello, friends, and welcome to the show. You know, we are about midway through 2020, and right now, of course, we're dealing with a pandemic, and for many of us, our lives have been upended. But if you think back to January 1st, 2020, many of us started out with some great aspirations. After all, we were looking for a whole new decade, the 20s, the roaring 20s, and yet the roaring 20s have come to a screeching halt. And now maybe you had some goals that you had planned on accomplishing and almost everything has changed. That is certainly the case for us here at Boss Builders. But if you are looking to get back on track, then today's episode will really help you out. Our guest today is Miko Whitlock. Miko was with us last year on the HR Oxygen podcast. His company is Mindful Techie. And when he was with us last time, he was talking about ways that we could create better balance with our technology. Well, he has also been thinking about change, and so what he's going to talk to us today about is goals. So what are three steps that we can use to get back on track with our year? Miko is a guy who studies this. He's a guy who practices it. He's got a great journal that I have a copy of. And again, practical strategies to help you recalibrate as you go into the second part of 2020. Hopefully, it's going to be a lot better than the first. So why don't we quit talking about Miko? Let's just talk to him. You know what to do. Go ahead, take that personal item, make sure it's tucked under the seat in front of you, make sure the seatbelt is buckled. It's time to fly.
Should the cabin lose pressure, oxygen masks will drop from the overhead area. Please place the mask over your own mouth and nose before assisting others.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast, the show focused on the overworked, overwhelmed, and underappreciated HR professional. And now, here is the host of our show, the Boss Builder, Mac Monroe.
So, Miko Whitlock, welcome back to the show.
And thank you for having me. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, we were just chatting a few minutes ago about the last time that we did a podcast together, and that would have been last year sometime. And so last year sometime, you were working on these really neat journals, and I know that people were getting themselves ready for an amazing 2020. For many people, 2020 represented a whole new decade, and we were even struggling with how do we write 2020? Do we write 20? And then people worried that people would forge checks and everything else. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest worry on the horizon. And then here we are today. So we're at the end of April of 2020, and I could really care less about 2020 because I haven't received a check in recent memory, and it's not a big deal. Everything that we had planned for, and even things we could never have anticipated, have happened to us now, and people call it the new normal. So Miko, tell us how the new normal has impacted what you've done. Tell us about the background. For those who have not heard the other podcast, Mindful Techie, and how have things changed for you?
Yes. So I am the founder and CEO of an organization called Mindful Techie, and I work with change makers. I work with those professionals and organizations that are out there doing good work in the world to improve the well-being of people, animals, and the planet. And I work with those folks to find work-life balance, tech-life balance, so they can do their best work and to live their best lives. And so I provide training, speaking, and coaching services specifically focused on a mindful and intentional approach to work-life balance, tech-life balance, and distraction and addiction, and mindful leadership. And a lot of the work that, much like you, Mac, a lot of the work that I do is in person. And I've been, in terms of making the transition, I do both online and offline training and coaching and speaking, but essentially, I've had to shift all of that, at least for now, online. And so for me, it hasn't been as much of a disruption. I've been working from home and working for myself for many, many years. But one of the things that I've noticed for the clients that I serve is it's presented a number of challenges. The first thing that I'm seeing in terms of how clients are coming to me and what they're needing with what's urgent for them is around employee well-being. And Qualtrics, I'm not sure if you've seen the report recently, did a survey where they looked at how people were responding, how people were coping with what's happening. And what they pinpointed was this idea that we're perhaps on the cusp of an emerging mental health crisis, with people being overwhelmed by the uncertainty of the shelter-in-place orders and how long it's going to take, people concerned about their financial welfare, their outlook, the social isolation from working from home, especially for folks that perhaps haven't been used to working from home full-time. And then, of course, the overload with all the technology, right? So we're more connected to our screens, perhaps than at any time before in history. And all of that is weighing on us. And so that's where I am right now. This is sort of a snapshot of where I'm in my business and some of the things that I'm seeing with the clients that I'm interacting with.
You know, it's interesting because when we had talked before, one of the big challenges for people was letting go of these pieces of technology so that they could have more of a balance. And yet we've all been tossed into a place where now that has become the expectation. And, you know, it's sort of like I look at the open office concept. You know, just a year ago, people were touting this amazing thing and we have collaboration and, you know, we're going to hot desk and all this stuff. And now it's going to be like, that is the last thing that you should do. The walls will come back up. The cubicles will get higher. And with technology, it's the same thing. You know, here we're trying, your work was getting people to have more balance, especially when they get home. Now their home and their work are often in the same place. It's like trying to teach exercise classes in front of the donut shop. I mean, how do people manage it now, Miko?
Yeah, so the fundamentals of what I teach and share, particularly coming from a mindfulness-based approach, haven't changed, right? And so some things that are going to be relevant for you know, HR directors and other folks that are in leadership positions in organizations is really being able to lead and to model this idea that we're not automatons, right? And so we're not going to be able to work 24/7 and get it all done. One of the things that we're seeing is that one of the consequences of this this challenge that we're dealing with is that people are actually working more and not less. And part of that has to do with the adjustment to working from home for folks that are not familiar with that. Part of it has to do with, okay, if my boss can't see me, how do they know that I am doing work? And then another factor is, of course, people are trying to figure out if they don't already have virtual programming and services, how to get those things online. But there are some fundamentals that really transfer over to what we're experiencing now, even before now. So a few things. One is simply having start and stop rituals for your work. So one of the challenges we've seen is, particularly if you're used to commuting into an office, for example, your commute time has disappeared. The time that you spend at the water cooler or having your coffee break, that has disappeared, right? But those things are still important. And we know that the commute time and the coffee break and, you know, going to the bathroom and going to the water cooler, those things serve as really important mental cues to help us shift from work mode to personal mode or to home mode. And we have to be intentional about building those things in. And so one of the recommendations I give for clients that I work with is to establish what I call your rules of engagement, where you sit down with your team, you sit down with your boss, and you say, here are going to be my general hours of availability. Here's when I'm going to start work and stop work. Here's how to reach me if something is truly urgent outside of these hours. And then you put those things on your calendar. You put your meal times on your calendar. Put your break time on your calendar. What that does is it helps to almost to replace the mental cues that you had by being in person or by commuting or by running to the person in the hallway and you have a few moments of chit chat and sort of break away from the work. So using your calendar, sort of one example how you can transfer that over to the virtual space. Something else that's critically important, perhaps even more so now, is to really get clear about what's important to you in terms of your home or your personal priorities. And putting those things on your calendar, just like you would put your meetings for work on your calendar. Many of us are really good about booking our calendar with meetings. But if I were to look at your calendar, if your calendar is essentially a ledger that tells me how much you value your time and what's important to you, the same way if I look at your bank account, I can tell you what's important to you about what you're spending your money on. I want to see sleep on your calendar. I want to see prayer and meditation on your calendar if that's important to you. I want to see the soccer game for your kids on your calendar. I want to see you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner on your calendar, in addition to the time you're spending in your meetings as well. So those are simple things. Those are shifts that I think are gonna be maybe new for some folks. But those are really subtle and simple ways that we can begin to find the balance in the fact that we're spending so much more time working from home, and that we're expected to be in front of our screens a bit more now.
You know, it seems like a lot of people are looking at work differently, you know. So if you look at the way, I guess, economists decided there would be a job, right? There would be the stuff that had to get done. And so we make a job requisition, we hire a person to do that. We were often measured by working hours, hours in the office. So I start at 8 and I'm done at 5. And then in the middle of the day, you know, your partner or spouse calls and say, hey, you busy? Yeah, I'm working. Mm-hmm. But the question is, what is the work? You know, like I remember my wife, when she was working for the government, she would be on a Friday and she would have every other Friday she could work from home. So I'd ask her, hey, what you going to do today? She's like, I'm working. I says, on what? She's like, I'm working. I said, like, what is the thing that you're doing? Well, I've got to return some emails and I have some meetings. And I don't think there was really any product. Now, if you were a craftsman, you'd say, yeah, I'm building this table or whatever it is. I think some of the work that we've just taken for granted as I'm busy doing work is really stuff that is mindless chatting, scrolling, whatever it is. And I think now we've either gone to a place where we're going to do all of that kind of mindless stuff, but we're doing it from home. What happens when we go back to work? And now we've seen people be able to work for 4 hours at home productively with accomplishments. What are they going to do for 8 hours in the office? Do you see any potential? Maybe I'm just kind of speculating out loud. Do you see any potential for that, Mika, where people are going to really be questioned on, like, what are you producing?
Yeah, and I think that's happening now. So we see one of the consequences of the work from home is for either insecure managers or leaders, or for insecure folks at any level of the organization, this tendency to want to overwork to prove that you're creating value, that you're getting something done. And part of that has to do with something you hit it on, which is mindlessness, right? So I talk about this in the context of the mindful leadership training that I do. And I start by asking folks, so what is mindlessness and what does it mean to be a mindless leader, right? So a mindless leader, one of the ways that we think about that is someone who is moving through life, moving through their work on autopilot without clear intention, right? And so one of the ways that we can get at the challenge that you talk about is to focus on one of the recommendations or practices that I recommend, which is for teams to get into the practice of setting intentions, right? So setting intentions, meaning getting clear about what is your intended outcome, and then right-sizing your work and expectations based on what that intended outcome is. Oprah, for folks who follow her, is really known for her thinking around this concept of intention. She talks about the fact that with any meeting that she has, no matter how important it is, she's always, before the start of that meeting, asking you know, these key questions. You know, what's our intention for this meeting? What's important and what matters? And so we can do that in the context of our work now, asking that question. Even before we decide that we need to have a meeting, because sometimes we might ask that question and decide that we don't need a meeting in order to get at what it is that we're actually looking for. We can use this to plan our days and to plan our weeks, whether we're planning as a team or as an individual. And so one of the things that I think is actually an upside, is actually an opportunity, is that, you know, when we do, quote unquote, you know, re-enter into the new normal, or enter into the new normal, I think for many organizations, they will have had the practice of seeing that they can get to the same outcomes in a different way, in terms of people being distributed, in terms of people working you know, less hours and having more flexibility. And one of the things that we know is with organizations that provide that type of flexibility, that provide that type of trust for their team, for their folks, those folks actually see higher productivity, a greater sense of well-being, better mental health. People are more excited about the mission and showing up for the work. People are less likely to leave the organization. And so there are actually these benefits if organizations are willing to embrace this, there are actually really tangible benefits that's backed by, you know, evidence that shows what it could look like.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that. And I'm also thinking about, so we're focusing on jobs and productivity and, you know, what am I going to accomplish? But I know that there's a human element in this as well. And I'm just kind of curious, I've sort of seen, and I can only speak for my team right now, we've always been virtual. And we'll do mostly calls. We did a Zoom call the other day, and it was really funny. And I'm hoping Rachel and Lisa not listen to this. But so it was early in the morning. Rachel has a young child, so she wanted to do it. It was 6:30 my time. And, you know, we were talking, and I look, and it looked like two squirrels had started a big fight in Rachel's hair, man. It was all over the place. And it's like, I don't know if people really care. And I'm starting to see this in some of the people that I'm doing regular Zoom with. People seem like they are dropping their facades a little bit. They're showing a little bit more of themselves. We saw, if you watched the draft last week, Bill Belichick's dog on the chair. We saw one of the people getting drafted in a bathrobe. It seems like people are being more open and showing more of their real selves. And they're doing it on this technology tool. So yes. If with that being, I think, true, how do you think people will do as they transition back to a physical workspace? Do you think that will build us stronger, or are people going to hold that over people? What do you think?
My sense, if I were to make a forecast, is that I think this is one of those places, again, where our organizations have an opportunity. So for organizations that choose to embrace this and find the right balance, you're going to see that folks have stronger connections, right, and stronger relationships. And one of the things that we know about this in the context of leadership and team building is that when you can tap into authenticity, when you can tap into vulnerability, when you can tap into what's real beneath sort of the superficial surface, you build stronger teams and you build stronger organizations that actually do better work, that are more effective. And you're talking about you're talking about also offloading a little bit of sort of the emotional burden that some of us carry when we go into work, where we feel like we have to temper who we are a little bit, right? And we have to be a sort of a more polished version of who we are, as opposed to just being our whole selves. When people are able to drop that, then they're able to be more fully present for their colleagues, for the clients that they're serving, and for themselves. And so I think it's a win-win all around. And on the flip side of that, I think that, you know, for organizations that choose not to embrace it, or perhaps they're slow to embrace it, I think those are going to be organizations that are going to see a high rate of turnover. And for those that are resistant, they might not survive. I think that's probably the hard medicine that, you know, we're going to see in some regard, that, you know, employees are going to be able to, in many ways, direct and push how this new normal is being shaped. It's not going to necessarily be a top down in the same way that we've seen before.
Yeah, it seems like I think people will feel a little bit more empowered, because once you've shown your true self, there's nothing else. And it's like accepting the way I am with some balance. My concern, I think, is what happens to organizations that say, well, we're not going to have everybody come back in the office. Are there going to be some people that have really missed the human connection that are going to really push back on staying virtual? And then conversely, what about a person who's like, God, I get so much more work done when I don't have to walk by that stupid water cooler and everybody stop me and ask me a billion questions. And yet they're going to be told, hey, you need to get back into the office. Do you see an interesting dynamic as just that piece of it comes together?
Yeah. So I think, as with the previous question, I think the organizations and the teams that are going to be successful coming out of this in that regard are going to be the ones that find the right balance. And so my sense is that we're going to see a number of hybrid approaches to this, because one of the things we recognize is that as much as the technology that we have is great, and I'm a big advocate for, innovative uses of technology that bring people together, but that is not a substitute for in-person human interaction. And we know that transformation, training, connection, service, all of those things are sort of taken to a different level when we're able to be in person and connect with one another. There's no replacement for that. And so I think that we're going to have to be able to find a balance. So for those folks that are just like, oh, I'm never coming back in the office, to the folks that are just like, well, I want to be in the office all the time. We're going to have to find a hybrid approach that works and allows for this middle ground. And I think it's going to look different for different organizations. In my previous work, I worked for an organization where we had folks that worked literally all over the world. We had a core base of folks that were sort of in the headquarters where I live now, but folks were based all over. And we would, as an organization, have designated weeks, you know, during the month or every 6 weeks, where it would sort of be like an all hands on type meeting, right? And so we knew that like that 1 week, everyone was expected to be in the office regardless of what your remote work arrangement was. And so I think my sense is that we're going to see more of those types of accommodations and negotiations to try to find the balance between the two.
Yeah. So in your previous, in the work you're doing, you had mentioned just quickly tech addiction, right? I think I heard you say that. Do you think it's possible, because now we're almost being forced to use tech, that this could create more tech addicts?
I think that, you know, that's a real possibility. I haven't seen any data to show that the current increase that we're seeing.
I mean, it's only been a couple months that we've really been locked down. But I mean, let's pretend this goes on for another 6 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, God forbid, but is it possible, do you think?
I think it's possible, but I think one of the things that we're seeing is, so I mentioned one of the challenges is with tech overload. One of the things that we're seeing is, I think as our human, the human part of us has a limit, right? And so I think before we get there, we're going to see more symptoms along the lines of people shutting down in a way, mm-hmm. and essentially saying, you know what, people sort of taking, sabbatical or Sabbath, digital Sabbaths, as we talk about these things, because we're going to see productivity, you'll probably see productivity drop, and people sort of get to a place of burnout, which will be an indication, I think, for some folks that it's time to maybe figure out a different way to approach this, a more balanced way to approach this. And going back to the Qualtrics survey that I mentioned, we're already seeing part of that right now, right? Which is sort of the rise in anxiety that people are feeling, the rise in social isolation, even though people are connecting through Zoom for happy hour and for birthday parties and things of that nature. And I think I'm saying all that to say that I think this is sort of the canary in the coal mine. Like, I think we're starting to see some of the indications of what could happen if we aren't paying attention. And fortunately, I think that there are folks like myself who are more and more having this conversation about what's happening. And so I think one of the good things is that now we have a captive audience, right? Because everyone is online and have to listen to us, right?
Right, so, right.
and we're having conversations like this. So my hope is that while our screen time increases, I've been seeing a lot of focus, in my feeds about folks saying, well, use this time for your own personal growth and self-development, for, investing in yourself. And so my hope is that folks will take that to heart when it comes to how they're interacting with technology as well, and not just for, getting in shape or learning to cook or rediscovering their love for reading or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I think that's good. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes. I guess I ask all the guests I've been talking to, just because I really don't have any answers, and I don't know whether anybody else does, but the more perspectives you get, I think the more at least you can at least make a somewhat educated hypothesis on it. And then in the end, all of us will figure we're either right or wrong, whatever that looks like. But I do want to spend just a little bit of time talking about goals. And like I mentioned earlier, I had no idea this was going to be this way this year. We had such great plans and we were going like crazy, and where it's getting real for me. See, I fly a lot on Southwest and I use the TripIt app. So when I get a plane booking, I forward it to TripIt. Well, Southwest has already been canceled, but then I keep getting these emails saying, hey, it's time to check in for your flight. And I keep realizing, God, I mean, I think I would have actually been on the road with two clients this week. And, yet I'm here. And not that nothing against you, Miko. I mean, I'm speaking with you, but it'd sure be nice to be making some money, right? So I'm probably not the only buddy, the only person who is listening to this that has really seen their goals hit a totally brick wall. So what is something you can offer us? If we had a big plan and it's gone, how do we pick up the pieces? Do we pick up the pieces? Do we just wait out 2020 and recalibrate January 1st, 2021? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'll start by saying that even though this current crisis has probably canceled a lot of tangible things for folks, that notwithstanding that, your big why, your calling, your purpose hasn't been canceled. That remains the same. And so the question that we're having in response to what you just asked me is, if things have been canceled, but our why in terms of how we've been called to be of service remains the same, then the question becomes, how do I get there in light of what's happening? And to dive a little bit deeper into this, when we understand our calling, our purpose, or our big why, whatever language you choose to use to identify that, both personally and professionally, understand that your goals are simply the metrics that you're using to measure your progress toward the realization of whatever that big why is or whatever that big vision is. So if the pandemic, this current crisis, has put you in a position where you feel like you're flat on your back and your goals are no longer relevant, they need to change, that very well may be possible. But the first place to start is by going back to that original vision. What was your original vision? And does that original vision still hold true, right? If that original vision still holds true, then the place that we start is within asking the question, okay, with my goals, do I need to recommit to my goals? Do I need to reimagine what those goals are? Maybe I can tweak them. Or do I need to remove them and think about some other ways that I can get to where it is that I want to go? So I'll give you a concrete example. So my vision, I've talked about this at the top of the call, is really centered in serving the change makers out there making a difference in the world, helping them to find work-life and tech-life balance. A lot of the work that I do is in person. And so my vision hasn't changed. I'm still about being of service to those change makers. Now, how I do that probably has to change, has changed in the interim, right? So if I had a goal to do X number of in-person workshops, well, that has changed, right? And so now I am focused on doing more virtual training. So that's one of the shifts that I've made for myself. And so instead of focusing on in-person, one of the goals in terms of reaching audiences is focused to doing more virtual training. You and I, before we began this conversation, talked about some of the work that I've been doing on LinkedIn and on some of the other social media channels. That is related to that. And a number of folks are figuring out ways that they can leverage what's happening right now to be able to do that. For lots of restaurants, for example, lots of restaurants for the first time are having to really step up in terms of delivery, right? And carry out services, whereas before many of them were sort of dine-in only establishments. And so that's another concrete example of how your why, your calling, your purpose remains the same, but you are reassessing or figuring out how your goals need to shift, right? Another more on the other extreme, going back to the restaurant example, there's a recent beautiful article written in the New York Times by a restaurateur who was reflecting on what this pandemic meant for her business. And essentially for her, it's about the people coming together. So the idea of transitioning her business to this carryout model didn't sit well, right? And so for her, she's having to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, well, maybe what I understood to be my calling and purpose has run its course, and maybe it's time for me to figure out another way to bring people together. Before, that was about owning a restaurant and providing good service and creating good food in that environment. But if I am not feeling like pivoting to this delivery model is going to serve me, or is calling me, or is for me, then what's the next iteration of the way that I can be of service in terms of bringing people together, which is part of her larger vision. So that, in the very high level, broad sense, is what I would offer to folks to understand that, again, your events might have been canceled. You might be working from home now. Restaurants might be closed. But why you have been called to be of service, how your unique calling and purpose for why it is that you've been placed on this earth, that hasn't changed. Now, how you get there, that might have to change. And that starts, I think, with the real acknowledgement that things have changed, right? And maybe the first place for you, particularly if your immediate needs aren't being met or you're concerned about that, your immediate need, your immediate goal perhaps might need to be to figure out how you're going to meet those immediate needs, right? So if you have a financial gap that you need to fill, then perhaps that's the first place, right? And so once you've filled that, sort of like with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you get your basic survival needs met first, and then you're better positioned to be able to deal with some of the longer term things related to your purpose.
Miko, do you think it's possible that something like we're experiencing could make a person change their purpose?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. So the way that I think about this, and being a person of faith and a spiritual person, the way I would frame it is that your purpose or your calling doesn't change, but what does change is your understanding of that purpose and calling, right? And I think that we can have situations in life, like what we're experiencing now, that are so traumatic that they cause us to reassess or perhaps understand our calling and purpose in a different way. Spiritual teacher Michael Bernard Beckwith says it this way. He says that sometimes pain will push you until your vision pulls you. Sometimes pain will push you until your vision pulls you, meaning that sometimes we need something extreme to help us to get to a place of greater clarity about what it is that we're supposed to be doing and in a sense of greater urgency in terms of fulfilling what it is that we've been called to do.
I'm guessing that a lot of people are probably going to realize they have a purpose maybe when something like this is over then, right? If that holds true, you're pushed until it's almost like you're trying to push start a car, right? Eventually you get it fast enough and it kicks into gear and off you go, right?
Yes.
Well, I have just one more question for you, Miko. And I've been trying to ask every guest this question over the past probably 6 or 7 episodes that we've been recording. And that is for the senior, right? Not the old person, but the senior in high school. Their dream of their senior year has basically come to an end. If you were a high school wrestler or basketball player or baseball player, that's done. The prom, the thing that you've been looking forward to in 3 years coming up to this, that's gone. Graduation. When I grew up in California, we had grad night at Disneyland. You go to Disneyland all night. It's nothing but high school seniors, and it was so much fun. That's gone. And if you're a senior in college, well, it's much of the same. Not only are you not going to have your big walk through graduation that you've been working so hard for, your whole last semester has been spent online. The quality probably hasn't been near as good. And if you were really excited to go out and find a job, you just happen to be graduating during the worst economy in recent memory. And so I'm thinking that both cases here are people who have completely had their goals upended. Miko, be the graduation speaker they're not going to hear this year. What would be a message you would give to them to help them through this time?
Life is full of ups and downs, and there's no such thing as a pain-free or challenge-free life. And no matter how much money you have, no matter what title you have, no matter how good your grades are, you're going to have things that push and pull you to your extremes. And all of those things are for your good and for your growth, because it's in the place of our growing edges, it's in the place of discomfort that we actually grow, that we're actually able to seize opportunities. And so I would encourage folks to see this as an opportunity to acknowledge the grief and the pain and the anxiety and the frustration that you might be feeling, but to not stay in that place. Because the difference between the folks that, you know, we see of as successful, folks that are progressing, are not folks that who don't get knocked down, but they're folks who get knocked down, but then they get up and dust themselves off and they keep moving. So I encourage people to start and to not stop, no matter what's happening, and to embrace the hiccups, to embrace the times where you fall down as opportunities to learn and to grow. If you're persistently asking yourself the question, what can I learn and how can I grow from this experience, as opposed to why me, why is this happening to me? You're going to be better situated to always come out on top.
That's great. Thank you, Miko. So how do we get in touch with you, Mikko? What are you working on these days that we can look forward to seeing?
So you can get in contact with me through my website and join the email list. So if you go to mindfultechie.com, that's MINDFULTECHIE.com, and click subscribe and sign up for the email list. That's the best way to get in contact with me and to stay in touch with what's happening. And in terms of what's coming up, I'm going to be doing a free masterclass and a course to follow that on this very topic that we talked about today, which is how do you actually do a hard reset now that the year's already started. And so most people think that the year's already started. I can't do a reset. You can do a reset anytime. And now is as good a time as any given what's happening. And so I'm going to be walking people through a framework that I generally only do once a year. I generally only do this at the end of the year. But I am offering it now because I want people to be able to have the opportunity to do this and to be able to get back on track with their year and to know that all is not lost, but to be able to seize the opportunities that are available for them, even in light of what appears to be really dire on the outside.
That's great. So how do we sign up for that? Is there a place on your website for that?
Yeah. So if join the email list. So if you go to mindfultechie.com, click subscribe, and you'll be on the list and you'll be notified once the details are released.
Awesome. Well, Mikko, thank you so much for spending your afternoon with us, and particularly for the words of encouragement for those who are listening today that are really thinking this is like the worst time of my life. We were saying with another buddy of mine that if you are a female senior in high school, and 20 plus years from now, your daughter is complaining because she can't get a date to the prom, what do you think mom's going to say? There'd be no mercy, right? No mercy. And maybe that's the wrong way to react to it. But thank you again, Mikko. We appreciate you being back on the show.
And thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the HR Oxygen Podcast. We hope you found something today that will relieve your stress, feed your soul, and pump you up to face another day. At Boss Builders, we want to let you know that we appreciate the hard work you do every day as an HR professional. And, as a reminder, always make sure to adjust your own oxygen mask before attempting to help those around you. Be well.